bought it so right. Are you feeling it? So loud, and it's so right. Till we're both drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober. What a great night. And it's so loud, and it's so right. Till we're both drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Go home, go sleep, wake up.
Underpants everywhere. Yeah. So, Facebook, huh?
Yeah, Facebook, I got rid of it, mate.
Done?
Did anyone notice?
Well, you posted about getting rid of Facebook on Facebook.
Yeah, well, of course I did, yeah. I would have actually posted on Facebook just before I left saying that I was getting rid of Facebook. And then what it was almost an accident. It was a serendipitous accident. I'd been thinking about it for a while because the stalky stuff just doesn't bother me. I forget anybody who's on the net, you know, you accept that sort of stuff. And, you know, if you're on Facebook, you just accept that they're going through your underpants, checking for embarrassing
marks,
telltale stains. And, but I do, the thing that really jacked me off about it was this terrible time suck that gave nothing back. But the only reason I went on originally was to channel traffic to the blogs, either to Berger or to Blunty. And it was just complete arse of doing that. When you, like, hooked up the new Berger, Dan, we stuck Google Analytics on, it was like a fucking revelation, mate. I went into that, like, little widget where they tell you where your traffic is coming from. And you could see, like, you throw a tweet out and all of a sudden, you know, 200 or 300 punters would turn up to see what you were talking about. You put something on Facebook, crickets.
Well, you've got the wrong goal there. I mean, you don't go to Facebook for traffic. You go to Facebook to read other people's passive-aggressive messages about each other.
Self-validation, apparently. It's all about validation, like, you know, how many likes you get. And the thing that really got me was I started to do this experiment. Like, the last month I was there, I thought, oh, I'm going to see how this, you know, I'm going to see if I can actually make this fucking work. So I started to post entries from the Berg. And sometimes I'd post the full one, sometimes I'd post the first part, sometimes I'd post half a part. And if I did like a partial entry, I'd then have a link back to the original entry. And again, nothing. I got more comments on those than I would get normally. Like, some people appreciated having the opportunity to have the chat. I thought, what the fuck, you know, what do I want to be doing that for? I don't want those comments here. I want them over on my own blog. And then I tried that for about a week or so, no discernible effect on traffic at all. And then I just went over to BuzzFeed and I just grabbed some funny photos. One was like a dinosaur attacking a wedding party, and one was some guy who'd built a sort of Pacific Rim style robot for his pre-toddler baby to stand. It was actually awesome. Like, it is an awesome photo. And I just started throwing these photos up, just one a day. And sometimes I'd write a little tagline and sometimes I wouldn't. And these were getting 90, 100, 120, 150 shares and just insane numbers of likes. I just thought, fuck you. I am not here to entertain you lazy fucking Facebookers who cannot be bothered leaving the sheltered fucking Zuckerberg workshop. It's just, if you cannot even be asked hitting on the link to come across to the, well, fuck you and the horse you rode in on with the NSA technician cunningly hidden in the back legs.
I like the idea that this is your way of getting more people to come to this blog. Maybe you should be nicer to them. This is the problem. I see a flaw in your plan, John.
So do you get more feedback through Twitter than through Facebook? That's what I'm saying.
Twitter's insane.
I don't think I'm giving away too much to say, but as I understand it with BrisbaneTimes.com.au, who, of course, I work for, they actually seem to get more response through Facebook than through Twitter.
Yeah, it's odd. It's really odd. I don't understand it. But then I guess it's the different way that people use it. You've got the little Facebook share buttons and the Twitter share buttons on stories, and they are totally right. If a story goes, you know, a little virus-y, it's probably because people have just been smashing that Facebook share button rather than the Twitter share button. I found that there was some, I don't know, some piece I wrote the other day which got something like 25,000 Facebook shares.
Oh, my goodness.
And about, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 Twitter shares.
Maybe they're different demographics. Like Twitter always seems to be like really left-leaning political nut jobs, and then Facebook's like all your mums and your granddads, and YouTube commenters are psychopaths.
So it's 100%
douchebag.
Yeah. Racist misogynists.
So yeah, we're splitting up the future of humanity not based on where we come from or the colour of our skin, but on where we post our comments.
And which Google Plus...
But they're the super nerds.
You go back and have a look at that thing that got the 25,000 Facebook shares.
That's
and,
the one that know, got the, six like Google Plus likes.
It got at least half a dozen Google Plus. So you know somebody obviously at Google has photocopied it, put it up on the fridge in the staff common room. And it has encouraged 5 or 6 people to go back to their desks and share a little G plus love on this article.
Should be really called Google Minus. So, Greg, you never even got on Facebook in the first place, did you?
No, I dodged that entire bullet. So that was because of my job as a teacher. I mean, there are teachers on Facebook.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Less since Facebook came on.
Behaving inappropriately on Facebook.
And so many teachers that I know who behave appropriately still have to, like, this minefield of wandering through and getting, you know, hey, Mr. Blah, will you please friend me now that I've left school? And, of course, they've got friends of friends who are still at school and you know, the shit goes down. No, it's not. I don't care enough. And it would be best for my career just to stay away from the whole damn thing.
Hey, Mr. Wah, join me on Snapchat. No block.
I reckon you have nailed the core problem with Facebook right there, which is the neediness. And it was the fucking neediness in the end that made me think I got to get the fuck out of here because I just never ever get that impression with Twitter. Like I got a lot more like followers on Twitter than I had friends on Facebook, but I get the impression that they really don't give a fuck whether I'm there or not. And I suppose I got that same impression with Facebook too. But I used to get people coming at me on Facebook with not so much inappropriate requests. I mean, I guess they were completely understandable. Although I did get some really uncomfortable sexual approaches on Facebook, which I really could have done without, which was another checkbox on
the NSA.
The path to my shutting it down. But with Facebook, there was two things with the neediness on Facebook. You know, there was always lots of like unpublished manuscripts or people had their projects that they wanted me to get behind but also the thing that really used to fucking drive me nuts was that they couldn't understand why I wasn't constantly on their page stalking them. I took this excellent photo of my kid dribbling oats this morning, and you didn't even look at it, JB.
How dare you?
You never give anything up, dude.
There does seem to be that, like, acknowledge my existence, the neediness. But I'm finding at the moment with Twitter, I'm having not a moral quandary, but I guess I'm finding I don't seem to be in the same mindset as a lot of Twitter. And maybe it's just the people I'm following. Maybe I need to do a cull. But it just seems to be so quick to go to outrage that I'm finding Twitter has equal measures of sort of outrage as Facebook has neediness. They've both got their own particular emotional swings. And roundabouts.
Yeah, no, there's a total Twitter rage machine that just, you know, sort of turns and burns in the basement and just fires up. Did you get that that graphic I sent you, the Twitter rage graph?
Yes.
It's just awesome, isn't it? And the x-axis is just like time of day. So it starts at like 12 a.m. and then goes through like to 12 a.m. the next day. And it's fucking awesome. Like you got It looks like about like 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. You got this little like spike in outrage, like, oh my God, have you heard of this? And then it goes to, I am outraged, just keeps climbing up and up, you know. Everyone is outraged. I am more outraged than anyone. Oh my God, someone just tweeted a joke about it that's offensive. I'm totally outraged. And spikes at what looks like about 2 in the afternoon, where everyone on Twitter is arguing with a total stranger. And then, yeah, it just falls away when X Factor's on. I must admit that I've been, you know, tending to the 10,000 pretty closely, and I cull. Well, after I had that initial cull where I got rid of about 3,000 or 4,000 people, I get rid of about 3 or 4 a week now, and I do it a lot more quietly. And one of the things that I look for is just eye-rolling outrage. The thing that really gets me, I don't know whether you're the same, Nat, but even if I agree with them, I just can't go on the rage trip.
Yeah.
Just think, oh,
it's
fuck
like I
no,
don't have the energy.
Really?
I've got a limited amount of things to get angry about, and I want it when I do get angry about something to mean something, but I do worry that I'm going the other way, where you kind of look at something like what's happening in Cairo, for example, and go, oh, you know, just violence in the public square. Okay. Whatever.
You didn't have to deal with that as a journalist?
No.
That's a great photo, though. I mean, it wasn't Twitter, it was more Facebook, and it showed some poor kid with his leg blown off in some, you know, some part of the world where that happens a lot, and all these people giving him the thumbs up.
Yes.
And it was likes don't help.
Yeah.
And that's it. So getting outraged on Twitter about Syria doesn't mean crap. I mean, yeah. Go and actually do something. So, you mean, just all that time, like, ooh, I'm angry. Get over it and do something.
You mean I wasted my time changing my Twitter avatar green for about 8 days before tiring and changing the picture?
Putting a tick on you. Put a green bar on us. Put a tick on us. Who cares? It's like, ugh. Anyway.
So why did you, Greg, why did you sign up for Twunter but not for
Only for the podcast, only for Smart Enough to Know Better. That's the only reason I joined Twitter, because I saw Twitter as a way of promoting the podcast, and also, so that was what I was going to get out of it, getting people to come to the new podcast we were creating. And the other side for me was using all the brains of the people I was following to sort through the internet for me. So instead of me having to go through everything, I could use all these sciencey type people to find the good stuff.
So do you use lists? Because I'm a big list user. I thought I was the only one who did it.
No. Well, otherwise you have to trawl through all the outrage. I mean, some people I follow because they're good friends, and some people I follow because they're, you know, good for the podcast, or they're funny or whatever it is. It's good to have a list. Or lists.
I need to get into lists. This is obviously the solution.
Yeah.
I've just been too lazy.
Just follow my lists, mate. I got 2 media lists, and they're both like 400 or 500 people strong. Mm. They're pretty good. I'll tell you what's a really good one, though, is when I set up the Cheeseburgers Twitter account to do nothing other than just pump out cheeseburger propaganda. I very tightly controlled who I followed there. I think I follow like 30, 40 people or something like that, and it's an awesome news feed. Because I really lays it in on the kinds of people I want to follow, and it's just this constant turnover of really fucking interesting links, which is what for journalists in particular, you often lose that once you've been on for a while, because you're right, you know, you end up following people that you know, or people that you know, secondhand, and you just end up with a shower of shit.
Yeah.
Whereas the thing that it can be really, really good for if you're a bit ruthless in the way you structure a list, or, you know, structure the people you follow, it can be the best news reports ever.
Mm. It is. I mean, that's the thing. I love Twitter. I feel like something sort of changed at some point in Twitter the last couple of years, but I think that might just be a consequence of the fact that Twitter was this kind of cool little hub when I first joined, which was the end of 2008, and I realized it would be brilliant for journalism, because I joined and then the Mumbai terrorist attack happened, and I was able to follow along with people who were live tweeting from the scene, and that was that was an eye opener to me of how powerful this could be. But somewhere in the last couple of years, everyone got on Twitter, or so many people got on Twitter, and now it's, which is great on the one hand, because you can follow, you can get those direct quotes from people, you can follow interesting conversations, but at the same time you do have now so many more agendas, I guess, whereas I kind of miss that, let's get on Twitter and just have a cool little conversation.
That's true, but remember, what you get in your timeline is what you choose.
I know, I know.
You reap what you sow.
Yeah,
yes,
but
you have to work at it. Curate it properly.
Yeah, I know. I guess I have to do some work on that.
Maybe what you need is something like I have with the cheeseburger feed, where you just set yourself up a little, even like a dummy account. It never tweets anything, but all it does is follows, I don't know, 50, 60, 100 people or accounts that are just awesome for the sort of shit that you're interested in.
And I never know how many times to kind of engage with Twitter now anymore, because there's all these rules, and Greg's good at this. He's done a lot of research into when you should post tweets and how you should construct your tweets and where you should put your link in your tweet.
And when you should actually put them out and that sort of stuff. Like,
no, that's right. There's a website you can go to. You give it access to your account, and it does start tweeting out adverts for penile implants, but
well, they're important to know about.
Yeah, it's a quid pro quo, and what they do while they're telling everyone, you know, you could be much bigger than you are, is...
let me get a pen.
It analyzes your followers and, like, when they're tweeting and basically when they're likely to be online, and it gives you a really, really lovely little matrix, I guess. And, like, if you drop a tweet in here, it's going to be seen by 300 people immediately.
Yeah, the other night I cracked a great joke. Well, I was impressed with it. But I made a joke because we were waiting for the royal birth at the moment. Kate Middleton, will she, won't she?
Oh, God, what?
Oh, wait. What did I just say? Will she, won't she? I meant boy or girl. Oh, God. Oh, touch wood. No, that was a horrible thing to say. Completely.
That's how she got the problem in the first place, like touching wood.
Well, we're waiting for whether it's a boy or a girl. And I just tweeted a joke about I hear Kate's crowning, and then the reply was, no, that's just the tiara. And anyway, it was just a stupid joke, but I was really impressed with it. But I tweeted it at like 11:30 at night, and no love for that joke. And now if I retweet it again, I just look like a psychopath.
Then you start being the needy, and you need to go to Facebook.
Needy. Yeah, exactly.
That's how it is, isn't it? Like sometimes you do.
Twitter, no, it'll be you.
It will be.
There's nothing less attractive than people who are needy on Twitter. By the way, I've got the least followers of anyone in this conversation. So if everyone could just add DNA Beast to their Twitter feed,
Greg came on and
just didn't even want to do it, and then leapfrogged me with his stupid Dalek games. I just want your love.
Shut up, Dan.
You know what my most successful tweet ever was? You don't, obviously, because you don't give a shit, but I'm going to tell you. It was at lunchtime. I was having a Mandarin, and the thought suddenly occurred to me, Mandarins, semicolon, so much more convenient than oranges.
It's true.
Massive favouriting, massive retweeting, and, you know, lots and lots of conversation on this very important issue.
So does that make you hate all humans, John?
It's the equivalent of taking a picture of your lunch and tweeting that. Like, it's that kind of, or Instagramming it. It's just that sort of, people love doing that in mundane crap. I don't know what it is.
But you know what, though? This is a good question, because last night I cooked myself the first meal, because we've just renovated our apartment. I cooked a meal for myself, the first proper meal that I'd cooked in this new kitchen. And I thought, I want to share this with people because I'm needy,
obviously.
Did
people want to share it with you, though?
Well, this is the thing. I put it on Facebook, and I made a deliberate choice to put it on Facebook and not on Twitter, because I went on Facebook, this is just a Facebook type post.
That's right. You knew that those pathetic, needy losers would be all
my
over
friends,
your dinner.
Yes, we were.
And it got liked, because it was, hey, I've had this achievement. Because Facebook to me is all I get are baby photos, by and large, engagement and wedding photos, exciting jobs, or super cool events that people are at, and it's all that, like, hey, this is what I've done, or hey, I've achieved this, and hey, and it's a kind of about getting that positive reinforcement. It's a bit like
a... Do you reckon people are just totally living a lie on Facebook?
There's got to be.
They're all actually, like, you know, just bundled up in the corner in their basements, covered in weeping sores, but they're only showing the highlights.
People are living a lie all over the internet.
I like the idea that maybe they're just paying a small a sum of money to a very poor Russian person who's, like, very attractive and having wonderful photos of fun stuff being done. Look at me. You know, look at me at Lake Irkutsk and that sort of stuff, and swimming and laughing with seals.
If you got an idea of what someone was like by going to LiveJournal, you'd think that they were a depressive, suicidal psychopath. And then you meet them in real life, they're just like you or me, but they only go to LiveJournal when they're in a mood.
That's because you're a depressing suicidal. That's the problem there.
Also, LiveJournal, isn't that a little bit 2005?
It still exists.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, most of the users have killed themselves.
Wow, that's worse than the Kate Wilshire watching mistake.
So you reckon Facebook will be around 5 years from now? Because, like, for a lot of people, it is the internet.
You know what?
It?
I find Facebook useful for keeping in touch with groups of people. So if I want to actually have a kind of bulletin board, I've tried using Google Docs, and that works in some situations, but in other situations it just doesn't. People don't check the document, whereas with Facebook you get a little ping, you get a little message saying Natalie has posted in this group, and you go, ooh, a message, and you go and look.
But
it's just...
Like, do you actually get out to those people? Because isn't there one of the problems with Facebook that they have, you know, it's a business decision, good luck to them, but one of the things they've decided to do is choke off the chicken neck of people's news feeds. You know, for instance, when I quit out of it, I think I had 3,448 friends.
Or thereabouts.
But I know that if I put something up...
DNA Beast at Twitter... DNA Beast. I could do with many more people following. Sorry, I coughed.
We might make you the sponsor for this week's
podcast. It's true. They are targeting.
But they do. Like, they don't... You know, just because you put something up, it doesn't mean that all of your, you know, so-called Facebook friends have seen it. As I understand it, it's actually quite a small percentage of them are going to get it in their timeline.
See, I'm talking about specific groups. The groups function on Facebook, which you can set to public, to closed, or to secret, I find really useful because we have, for example, for our Impro company, for players, we have a secret group that is just for players, so we can let them know, hey, this show is on tonight, or does anyone have this, or this is some information, and it gets out to everyone because they get a little notification because they're in that group. So I find that particular function of Facebook very, very useful.
Events is good too.
Events used to be better. It used to be better.
You're a believer in events, Dan.
I just used it for the first time.
I never once checked it. I can't recall how long I was on Facebook, maybe 4 or 5 years. I never fucking once checked my events.
Well, I guess that's why you didn't make it to my housewarming the other night then, John.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. You want me to come to that housewarming, you come around to my house and you tell me it's on.
I probably
won't come, but
people seem to forget that you're not on Facebook. This is my lament, because I'm not on Facebook. It's a decision I've made, and then suddenly people are talking about this thing that's on in 20 minutes. And like, are you not coming to my party? Like, what party? It's all over Facebook, Greg. And you're like, oh, that closed environment. Yeah, no, I know nothing about it. So, gets my goat.
Yeah, we'll have to start sending telegrams to you back there in 1916.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
It is a lazy way, but it can also be effective, I find, Facebook. So I'm not sure in which way it will go, because sometimes I've gone through phases with Facebook where I find it super annoying and just want to get out of it. But
you don't find yourself, like, wallowing in self-loathing every time you log on?
Yeah, that's most days. Yeah.
So Facebook is like-minded friends.
Wow.
Misery loves company.
No, you know what, though? Speaking of that, I used to vague book a lot, and I will admit to that. I will cop to that. And I have used Facebook to go, oh, I'm sad. Why doesn't anyone something feel happy? Why doesn't anyone give me attention or whatever? I totally cop to that. And now I've tried, well, over the last few years, I've tried to rein in that behaviour where I believe that I've completely stopped. And if
and
I
now, now that at Girl Clumsy on Twitter has over 3,000 followers, she's
and
doing
and
fine.
A blue tick. let's just before we go to this week's sponsor, let's just pour over the entrails of this inexplicable injustice where at Girl Clumsy, who has a mere, you know, I don't know, 3,000 followers.
3,000 followers.
I shit 3,000 followers every morning when I get out of bed. Just, oh, look at that, 3,000 followers. Yeah, I'll get around to them later on.
He flicks his fingers and they just fall off. The followers.
He's got a blue tick.
I feel like a dog at the table of kings.
You know what I don't have? A blue tick. I've spoken to Fairfax about that. Yeah, blue ticks come. I've spoken to your blue tick. Where's my fucking blue tick? I've got a fake, JB. There is a fake John Birmingham Twitter account.
Is it Nick Earls?
Which I totally fucking buried because my misanthropic drunken tweets just, you know, put this fucking pale imitator in the shade. So I had a fake Twitter. I still didn't get a fucking blue tick.
It wasn't your editor desperately trying to do damage control, was it?
I'm not bitter. I'm just saying I don't have blue tick.
He keeps his friends close and his enemies closer, Nat, so watch out.
Mine was through work. I can't credit it to being any kind of someone myself, but they were doing a thing through Fairfax where they said we can get blue ticks for our journalists if you follow this, you know, sign up for this thing or, you know, fill in this form basically. And I went, oh, okay, I'll see if I can get one. And they gave me one.
And so you now get all the invites and all the good stuff.
What?
All the things that I would get if I had the blue tick.
I don't think I've ever gotten
get any of that.
The parties, the bookers and blow.
Is that your hovercraft parked out the front, Natalie?
Yeah. It's platinum plated. Don't say anything.
Oh.
Hey, I've got a joke for Greg that he's going to enjoy. I'll bet that Patrick Warburton has a blue tick.
Oh, very good. Very nice.
Okay, please continue.
I have been in John's position where I've seen other people with blue ticks and gone, how do you get one of those? How did that person get one of those? So I can totally understand that.
Can I point out that I don't have a blue tick either? Sorry, if we're going to be outraged.
You don't need a fucking blue tick.
I'm the one.
You don't even have a Facebook account. What do you need a blue tick for?
Neither do you, John, anymore.
Yeah, but I chose not to have a Facebook
account. So did I. I chose not to have one too.
I could totally have one if I wanted one.
I think, John, with Facebook that you should set up a fan page or something that is actually for your work but not for you personally, and that way...
You know what? My useless fucking fans should set up a fan page.
Oh, well...
That's what they should do.
I don't think they're actually
and
called fan
pages. And they can get
pages.
Me a blue tick while they're about it as well.
I got a big red cross on mine. I don't know what that means.
You just got a big hazmat symbol.
Bring out your dead.
Social media, who knows what... It
but you
does.
Know who needs some social media. You know who needs some social media love? Our
yeah,
sponsor for the night.
At DNA Beast.
Are we really doing this?
Yeah. It's got no love.
Not while Nat's here. I feel this great sense of foreboding.
You should definitely follow at DNA Beast on Twitter and tell him exactly what you think of him when you do it.
You know what you should also do? You should send him your unpublished manuscript.
Yes, yes. And unwarranted sexual advances. He loves that.
And definitely with the unwarranted sexual advances and the possible projects you got going on. At DNA Beast loves to hear about your unfunded Kickstarters and possible
and all your
Spartacast slash fiction. He loves that too. Get into that.
Actually, you know the thing I'm really after on the internet? I've got a really small penis. So if anyone can send me information about how to make that bigger, that'd be great.
You know, if you had a blue tick,
You would have the biggest penis
actually,
in the world.
That's what I want this podcast to do. I want at DNA Beast to get a blue tick before John Birmingham. I think that would be kind of fun.
No, that would. No, don't do that.
Start a campaign for
all joking aside, I don't reckon I'd cope with that. I'd have to rejoin Facebook to put one of Natalie's little self-pity posts on.
A vague tweet.
Can I just point out I don't vague book anymore. If I'm having a bad day, I say I am having a bad day because of this, and I don't vague book anymore. If I don't have anything nice to say about someone, I just don't say it, and I will just bitch to Dan or Greg.
Say it on the internet, but she yells at me. That's what it's fine.
But that's real life. That's what we humans were doing for thousands of years before Facebook.
Bitching behind closed doors.
Cavemen rolled back the stone and had a quiet bitch in front of the, you know.
This passive aggressive stuff is terrible. What we really need to deal with any sort of emotional problems out of pit monsters versus giant robots.
Yes. Awesome. Who's seen it?
I see you rolling. On your segue.
Stop drawing attention to the segues. It ruins it when you point out that it's a segue. I've seen it.
I'm all over it. I saw it with two 11-year-old boys, my son and one of his mates, and which I thought was the perfect audience for it. And, yeah, we all agreed going in. It was likely to be awesome. And coming out, we had no reason whatsoever to change our opinion.
But of course, talking about Pacific Rim.
We are talking about Pacific Rim. Yeah, I suppose. Fuck yeah. Sorry, audience.
John just said something really telling, which was the ideal audience for this film is 40-something-year-old men and pre-teenage and teenage boys.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it twice, by the way. I've seen it twice. So there you go.
What?
Uh-oh.
Twice?
Oh, dear.
Yes.
Second viewing of Pacific Rim. Detailed subtext.
You're missing the subtleties of the punching.
No. There is a lot to get out of the second time around, thank you very much. Someone who's never actually seen it. You don't get to make these comments.
I'm sorry, so, I saw the trailer. What could there possibly be?
No. Look, the trailers are awesome. Let's be honest. They're insanely good. You know how it is with Hollywood. Like nowadays, you watch the trailer, you don't even want to go and see the film because all the good shit's in the trailer. There is so much more robot punching in the film than there is.
The trailers don't give you the total audacity of the movie. Like there are people in that movie named Marshall Stacker Pentecost and Hercules Hansen. You go, good God, any movie that has like men like, with names like that, and even the girl, the tough female character, her name was Mako Mori, which I think means shark kill. I think it means shark death in Japanese and Latin. You're like, shark death? Really? That we're going there? That's cool. So they might as well call the character Thrusted Badcock.
That's my Twitter name. That's my other account.
The characters totally got developed in this film.
They had a journey. They overcame some obstacles.
Oh, fuck no. They had so many journeys. And, like, they overcame heaps at the same time as they punched the shit out of these giant dinosaur sharks from another dimension.
You know how I thought it was going to end, but big spoilers, I thought it was going to end with, like you know...
No, we got to stop right there. And do our spoilerific warning.
Spoilerific warning, fair enough. Yes,
yeah,
spoilers.
We are going to like loll around in the details of this film. Like,
you're going to know who gets punched, with what fists they get punched.
Don't get that spoiled. If you have not seen it, you need to leave now. Come back.
Honestly, people making a decision, go and see it. It is a lot of fun. I mean, it's really, really high explosive summer blockbuster.
Actually, can I put a caveat on that? If hearing the setup, it's giant robots fighting giant monsters.
Yes.
Makes you smile. You will smile through this entire film.
Yeah.
If it sounds like the worst fucking day of your life to watch that, maybe give it a miss. Watch Pride and Prejudice again.
I find it hard to believe that anybody could not enjoy this film. Like, it's got everything.
It doesn't have everything. It has two things, and they're both really big, John.
No. It's also got characters being developed, as in tough female characters being tough but still vulnerable, and male characters fighting each other because someone insulted someone else. It was awesome. That was a brilliant fight.
Apologize to that in films. There was probably too much character development.
I read an article today, and Del Toro said they cut an hour out of the film, an hour of stuff, because that was the character development. They cut it all away. There'll be a director's cut.
That makes me... Oh, please, God, no. No, like, if the director's cut had, like, another hour of like, giant punchy robots, then I'd buy the Blu-ray. And a Blu-ray player to play the Blu-ray in. But I do remember sitting there, like, with these, you know, two 11-year-old film critics with me after we'd had a solid 2 or 3 minutes where no giant shark monsters had been punched. I remember thinking, I hope this isn't going to go on too long. And fuck me, it went on for at least another 6 or 7 minutes. Characters developing everywhere.
But in one of those character development moments, two guys basically beat the shit out of each other in a hallway. That's pretty good. Could have liked that one.
The bar's been raised, Greg. That's like watching people talk about their feelings comparatively.
What I couldn't work out, I don't know if I just have face blindness or something, but at that moment, I couldn't tell which blonde-haired, lantern-jawed, blue-eyed gentleman was which. So I focused on their shirt colours. Went, okay, the one I like is in blue, and the one I hate is in green. Okay, I've got this all worked out now. It's fine.
Well, you had to listen. What we had to do is focus in on their dodgy accents, because the blue-haired, blonde-eyed, American good-looking chap was actually played by an Englishman, and the blue-blonde, Australian good-looking chap was
played by someone from South Africa or something.
Yeah. I remember there being what sounded like an Irishman who had a stroke. Is that the Australian guy? I wasn't too sure.
Yeah, look, I sort of, like, originally when, like, it was two Australian guys, because they had that fantastic scene with the kaiju, the monster smashing up Sydney, although I have two quibbles with this film. And, like, the first one is, to do the Sydney scene, like, they had to establish it was Sydney, and how do you do that? Obviously, you have the Opera House.
Yeah.
And the
Harbour Bridge.
Now, it's my memory, and unlike Greg, I've only seen it once, and I will probably go back and see it in 3D. I will wear the migraine to go back and see this in 3D. But my recall is that the way they framed that shot, the kaiju seemed to be emerging from Balmain.
Yes.
kicking through the wall from the inner west into the inner harbour.
Yes. Yep.
And the camera was
probably set up at Taronga Park Zoo. That was the other problem. Yeah. I was like, what? Why is this? Like,
that's right. Interesting. How does that work? And it works, obviously, because the vast majority of people who see this film have no idea of the geography of Sydney, and they just see the Opera House and the bridge. And there's Sydney getting stomped. That's awesome.
The other movie that showed Sydney being stomped, of course, was Independence Day years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
And you see at the end when all the ships crash, and you see like a burning hulk of a ship, and once again, you've got the Harbour Bridge and you've got the Opera House. But when you realise, if you're in Australia and you look at that shot, you go, holy shit, the western suburbs of Sydney just got crushed by a kilometre long spaceship. Millions have died, and yet we all go, yeah! But it was the western
suburbs
of Sydney.
But the property value went up, actually, after that crash.
It was the... I thought it was the eastern suburbs which got squashed.
Oh, right. Oh, there you go.
As long as it wasn't the North Shore, no one will really care.
No, because that's where the fucking kaiju were coming from. So.
That's right.
But there was that, and I'll totally let them have that, because there is no way to frame that shot with the walls sort of, you know, in the east, because it's boring. What happens is the bridge ends up in front of the Opera House, like, forget it.
Yep.
But the other one was, if you go back, and it just if you think about when American space, like, robot jock who loses his partner
Riley.
Comes back.
Riley, his name's Riley.
Is it Riley?
Riley.
Oh, Riley.
Riley.
Well, that was one of the jokes.
What's weird is it's spelled Riley. Yeah, it's R-A-L-I-E-H, but he pronounced it Riley. He even says it in the movie. The Australian guy goes, "Hey, Ray," and he goes, "My name's Riley." And I was like, that's a really odd way of... Anyway, it's fine. Then some monsters got punched, so I didn't care.
Yeah, but before the monsters got punched, when they arrive, when Riley, let's just call him Riley.
Yep.
When Riley arrives at the Hong Kong Shatter Dome.
The Shatter Dome.
And he gets off the helicopter and the helicopter's like, you know, it's turning and whirring and shit. Not a hair out of place. Like, there is absolutely no downblast from that helicopter at all. Like, if you haven't seen the film, you shouldn't be fucking listening to this part of the podcast, but if you have, and you go back and see it a second and third time, like me, or you're watching on TV years later on, because the internet has a long tail, have a look at when that helicopter comes down. There is not a fucking breath of downblast from the
rotors. And you know there's a lot of energy coming off those helicopters because four of them can carry one of these 100 million ton robots around.
The thing that made it even, like, the thing that struck me as completely perverse, and it was such an odd choice because, you know, Del Toro, the director, made, like, perfect choices thousands of times all the way through this film. Mako is waiting for Riley to get off the helicopter, and she's standing there with an umbrella.
Yeah.
In the downblast, the umbrella's not even fluttering. It's just bizarre. It's just it's a perverse.
Could the helicopter have stopped its blades very quickly? Like in the future, they have fast stopping helicopter blades. We do have giant robots punching giant monsters here. We could kind of, you know, give them a little bit of slack on that one. Just a bit.
No
slack? Okay. Sorry, I'm wrong.
Just ruffle the umbrella. Or put the umbrella down.
It would have ruined the hero shot. That was a good hero shot.
It was a good reveal. Perfect. You just saw the shape coming towards you, and we didn't know it was a girl then, I don't think. It was just in black, and then suddenly it revealed the umbrella, and you go, oh, it's a woman. And that was like with blue bangs. And that was what I thought anyway.
People have been saying that they didn't like the romantic story in this. I thought it was actually really well written.
I must admit, I thought I had a problem with it, and the more I thought about it, I realized I didn't, because it wasn't really a romantic storyline. It was two people who went inside each other's brains, who trusted each other, and at the end, they didn't kiss, they just hugged.
Yeah, like, I know. Yeah. That was great.
It wasn't a kiss.
He didn't go after her at all. I mean, he just wanted her in the robot head with him because, like, he thought she was, like, kick-ass.
Yeah.
Whereas she hero-worshipped him because he was, like, a hero.
Mm.
And, like, he kicked a lot of monster ass, so why not worship him?
I feel like IQ points are dropping away by the second.
Yeah.
The monsters, I think the monsters were really well done. I really liked the old school Godzilla feel to them. Like they weren't, if you've seen Evangelion, the monsters in that, like the angels coming to destroy the earth and that, were all, like, some of them are super intelligent shades of the color blue and one looked like a giant death bird. They're all very different and very varied. Mm. But you couldn't relate to them. They were truly alien. But these ones, the kaiju in Pacific Rim, they looked like dudes in suits almost. Like they had a very physical feel to them, I felt.
Did you get that link I sent you to the... it's like an IO9 story talking about all the work that they put in.
Oh, yes.
And I thought that was really interesting because one of the things, like, they sat down and they did their sums. And one of the things they found early on was that, you know, if you built a robot that was 250 feet tall, it would have to move really fucking slowly.
Yeah.
As would, like, a kaiju of that size. But, of course, if you move slowly, then it's kind of a dull film.
Mm. But it's scientifically accurate, and that's what I appreciate in my cinema.
This is the comment that I went to see it with some friends. I assumed like-minded friends. We went late at night. We went and saw it, big group of us. And I was the only one who came out of my friends going, that was really fun, absurd, amazing fun. And everyone else were quibbling about the science. And everyone knows I love quibbling about science. I'm all over that.
You even do it on your own podcast with DNA Beast.
That's true. Smart after the better. Everyone should download it. But that's not what that movie was about. It was about giant robots punching giant monsters and everyone just chewing the scenery. Like everyone. What was that great line? Do you want to die here on this this wall and you want to die in a Jaeger. And you're, everyone's just like, yeah.
But that pales into comparison to today. We fight back today. What is it? We fight back against the apocalypse.
We're cancelling the apocalypse.
Cancelling the apocalypse.
We say no to the monsters at our gates. Just say no and punch it in the face.
Why didn't they say unfriend the apocalypse?
And if you drive it by yourself, the machine will basically tear your psyche out and shit out its engines. And so it's everyone's like going mad and getting cancer and punching monsters. It was, how wonderful is this movie?
I mean, isn't it a tagline? Go mad, get cancer, punch monsters. Pacific Rim.
That's how, that was the recruiting drive for the Jaegers. I would still do it. I mean, I'd still be all over that. I'd be like, yes.
Did I send you that piece? I think it was like a Slate piece about the international cast.
Yeah.
That struck me too. Like, you know, when I saw Idris Elba, who plays the Marshal, who... like
Idris
first
Elba?
Marshal.
Hang on. Critically acclaimed actor from The Wire.
Critically acclaimed actor.
Yeah, I just want to say his name. Luther. Idris Elba played Marshal Stacker Pentecost. You can go on now.
Monsters at the gate.
There aren't many people who can carry off those lines, Nat, and he's not one of them, it turns out.
Oh, no, he was brilliant. No. Get real. Come on. Then we're going to put Tom Cruise. Then we're going to put Tom Cruise in that role.
Oh, no, you can't give it to Cruise. The only issue I had with Idris was, like, as soon as I recognised him from The Wire, having to, like, wrench my head out of the expectation that he would be basically talking in an American accent. And that took a little bit getting used to, because I assume he was talking in his normal voice for this film.
Well, I was waiting for his 100-metre-tall robot to go to business school. That's a joke for people who watch The Wire. Don't worry. Okay, so don't follow me on Twitter.
Everyone now en masse should unfollow Dan at DNA Beast. Just get off it now. Just no. Everyone, leave
actually,
now.
Actually, follow him first and then unfollow him just to really rub salt into the wound.
I wish I could defend that action.
So Pacific Rim, because I haven't seen it, and look, at the end of the day, I'm quite happy for Hollywood to make these stupid movies, because I think about myself and go, if someone asked me to be in a movie about giant robots punching giant monsters, I would probably go, where do I sign? Because it would be fun.
You'd be a great giant monster.
Shut up. I'm trying to lose weight. Oh,
tell it to Facebook.
Is there much... So you know what? I'm not going to ask a cliched question.
No. Go on. Ask the question. Is there much what?
Is there much in it for chicks? And I'm not talking about, like...
Yes, there's giant robots punching giant monsters.
Okay, cool. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's all I need to know.
And also, no, honestly, Mako Mori, the main female lead, I really like what they did with her, because she was capable... And she was a brilliant fighter. And the moment they do the reveal that she's a brilliant fighter, she's not dressed in her underwear. She's dressed in combat fatigues. And she fights with a stick and she holds her own. And in fact, I think she beats him.
I don't think there was any gratuitous booty shot in this film, was there?
There was not.
No.
So, well, you know, black eyed had got tomorrow for that, I guess. But, it contrasts with Star Trek, with completely gratuitous booty shot.
Yes.
Look, my underwear. Do you mind? Her in Star Trek, her "do you mind" almost felt like it was at J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, really? We're doing this?
Greg's right. Like, Mako is actually a great female hero. Mm. And I'll tell you who was really good. She didn't get a huge amount of screen time because she didn't need to, but the little kid who played, Kitty Mako Manila's getting torn apart. I totally bought her as a terrified 6-year-old. getting monstered by a 250-foot monster. She was fucking awesome.
What was with that creature? Like, she's crying, little girl crying in the middle of Tokyo with, like, one shoe, looking for her mum and dad, very, you know, all very brokenhearted. Turns around, there's a giant crab creature behind her, and it sees her. It actually looks at her and decides, yes, I'm going to eat that kid. And it comes for her. And it, the thing's like 100 metres tall, and it seems to spend the next 10 minutes of its life, the last 10 minutes of its life, which was its tactical error, chasing a little girl down an alleyway.
You never done the same thing with a cockroach?
Yeah, it's just like a kid with a magnifying glass in an ear.
it was pretty rude.
Oh, damn, that laugh. You're that kid, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Dan.
It's like a magnifying glass, but that's powered by a nuclear reactor.
You know, you're going to finish this podcast with less followers on Twitter than you started.
Don't worry, everyone will friend you on Facebook instead.
And they'll follow you on Google Plus.
Oh, yeah, my Google Plus stats will go through the roof. Right, that's it. I'm getting a drink.
All right, I think it's Natalie's shout.
She who doesn't see the movie.
I just had Coke. I don't drink.
Good, you can buy one for the rest of us then.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Fine. It's your round. If you're hanging at the back
of the bar, so just bounce. Like you're hanging in the back. You have been listening to SpartaCast. Stalin's Hammer, John Birmingham's new polite discourse into shooting historical figures, can be found at momentumbooks.com.au. Greg and Dan, the Corbett and Barker of science, comedy and ignorance, can be found at smartenough.org. Natalie Bohensky is one of the delicate flowers growing in the Fairfax Media Arboretum. You can smell her fragrance at brisbanetimes.com.au. This has been a Smart Enough Bunny production. Maggie Gyllenhaal speaking.